And welcome to episode 22 of the Star Trek Discovery podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And tonight, which is the same night as our last short trek, we are going
tonight! Woohoo!
Yep. Second episode tonight. We are covering the second short trek, which is titled Calypso. And that is a story by Sean Cochran and Michael Chabon, teleplay by Michael Chabon, and directed by, let's cross our fingers and hope that I get it right this time, Olatunde Osunsanmi, close enough. And it actually had a very long description on Wikipedia, but here it goes. It says, the USS Discovery, after drifting in space for 1,000 years, has evolved to the point that its computer system has become sentient and has named itself Zora. She retrieves a passing escape pod carrying a man named Kraft. Well, that's not exactly true. He calls himself Kraft. Anyway, Zora reveals that she has been ordered to hold her current position for the past millennium. Zora initially keeps Kraft aboard the ship. She wants company and is beginning to fall in love with him, but eventually lets him take Discovery's last shuttle to return to his home on Alcor 4. So what did you – I assume you don't have a rating for this one because you didn't have one for last one, right?
I mean, not really. I like this one. I liked it, I think, just as well as I liked the previous one, but
yeah,
for different reasons.
We got varying degrees here, so from listeners. I found that this was the second short trek, and I would say that this was my second favorite. So it's like with the first three, I liked the short treks more and more. So I'm going to give this a 9 funny faces. All right. So let's go into our yeses.
Yes. Wait, so you like the one with Saru best?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Sorry. I screwed up your yes.
No, all right. So
do that again.
I know I'm going to. All right, so let's move on to our yeses.
I'm so out of practice.
Yes!
And to that I say...
Yes!
Oh. Ruthie's a little rusty, but that's okay.
This is how the sausage is made.
Yep. And I am trying to edit less, so we'll keep a lot more of these kind of things in. Not saying we're going to keep it all, but I'll keep some of it anyway. All right. Well,
you know, the thing I think that most people maybe don't realize about doing a podcast, because it is recorded, is that you really do still have to think on your feet super quick. And sometimes I don't.
Yes, because
I'll write it and we'll do it live.
That's right. And sometimes my brain and my brain is a little bit behind or ahead or whatever.
Oh, you know, we're like we said in the last short trek, we were recording these first three on a single night, so we might be a little rusty. And we'll, by the time the episodes come back, we'll be in full form. But I've been podcasting way too much.
Yeah. No,
so I'm not too rusty. I took a couple of weeks off, but
no, gosh, it's been like almost a year, I guess, for me.
Yeah,
for that round table.
I was thinking about that. Other than the couple of round tables we've done, this is the our last episode for Discovery was back in February of last year. I mean, it's
yeah, like
close to 11 months.
Yeah.
You know, so it's understandable.
So definitely out of practice.
That's all right. Okay, so speaking of yeses, I actually did put Tilly's whole feedback in as a yes because she gave it a 10 out of 10. She said she loved this episode. I would totally watch a whole movie with this ship and craft just wandering about the universe. I'm also fascinated by the fact that the ship has become sentient and would love to see the story of how it got that way. Can we have a show just about Discovery and its journey to becoming Zora? I'd watch that 100%. I love that this short trek expands the Star Trek universe into a direction that we've never seen before. And it's canon now, right? Yep, I would say that it is. So they can one day pick up on the rest of this story? Is this the reason why no other Starfleet ship has technology similar to Discovery? I need to know. And I'll tell you, I had thought about this, and I wonder if this, whatever it's done here, it makes me think of Section 31. And it's like, if maybe time travel was involved, like maybe they sent the ship with the spore drive, they figured out how to like operate it without a human pilot, and they sent it forward into the future, even more forward in the future. And then since then, it's been sitting 1,000 years. Because she doesn't say it's the 33rd century. She just says that she's been sitting there for 1,000 years. So maybe it's 1,500 years into the future, you know? And think about it. Section 31 would send this ship into the future. They wouldn't destroy it because maybe they needed it at some point so that go forward in time and they get it. I don't know. And they don't say it was like Captain Pike or Saru or Burnham or, you know, she doesn't say who her captain is. So maybe it's Captain Jojo. Who knows? Crazy. But I just wonder how it got there and what the story is. So I agree with you. It would be interesting to get that story going, but I don't know.
I agree. I thought that was really cool. I would definitely watch it if Aldous Hodge were on it.
Yeah, the characters were both really good. I would say. And one thing that I put in the yeses, I thought that very first shot that we see with Discovery catching Craft's ship with the two tractor beams, and as it's like, you know, going across Discovery, I thought that shot was absolutely beautiful. And you know, it was enough that I, you know, took it and thought that it was is really nice. Like I expected not to see any kind of computer shots in this, but there was actually a lot. Like they spent some money on this short track. Definitely. Like the first one seemed to be, you know, seemed to be like a bottle episode essentially, but this one, well, while it was definitely a bottle episode, it had special effects. All right. So I have a no as well.
No!
He's never heard of tacos? He's never heard of Taco Tuesdays? He's never heard of Tuesdays? I just thought that was kind of strange. So, did you have anything that you wanted to highlight in the nose?
No, but I mean, 1,000 years is a long time.
Yeah, that's definitely true. All right. Well, we do have, and Wes, I put this in the hold your horses. So here we go.
Hello, this is Captain Tilly. What the heck? Hell. What the hell? Hold your horses.
Every time I hear that, it makes me laugh. You want to read Wes's comment here?
I do. Why in the heck didn't Zora do whatever she could to keep him on the ancient discovery? That didn't make much sense to me. Well, Wes, when you love someone, you let them go.
Yeah, I thought of that. Now, I think he's like, you know, this is titled Calypso, and I believe Zora is Calypso from, you know, mythology in this story, and Kraft is Odysseus. You know, that's not a story that I really knew very much. I've not read a lot of that stuff, but I did go back and research it. And yeah, in the ancient, you know, in that story, I know in the Odyssey, Calypso did a lot more to detain Odysseus. So if you're thinking about it in that respect, I guess I would agree. But in the end, having a sentient computer that is, you know, Starfleet issue, kind of like with, you know, like restrain or detain or imprison someone, I don't think is like Starfleet. It doesn't match what something from the Federation or Starfleet would do. So maybe that's why they didn't do that. I don't know. I liked it for what it was. So
I agree. I thought it was amazing. I mean, I'm so far, 2 out of 3 so far, I am super impressed with what they've been able to do with less than 20 minutes.
Yeah, I would agree. One thing I had here was, what's with the lightning? I mean, lightning in space, is that a thing? I didn't think that you could have lightning in space, but we've seen effects like that. It's
just electricity.
Yeah. I know I heard somebody object to that on another podcast.
Well, it's not like fire. It doesn't require oxygen, I don't believe.
Right.
It's a phenomenon that occurs from, like, static buildup of electricity, I think. I'm no weatherman. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know but either.
It's not like fire, so.
Not like fire. Indeed. All right. Well, that's it for...
Hang on a second. I'm going to Google, can lightning occur in a vacuum? Lightning, as we know it, in air, cannot happen in vacuum because lightning depends crucially on the generation of positive ions and negative electrons by ionization of molecules of the air in high electric fields.
Okay.
But that's just lightning as we know it in air. So.
All right. Well, now it is time for our regular feedback. So.
Ooh, here's one. Can electricity travel through space?
Ah.
What like does a light it say? Bolt or something. see, this is more in line with what I was thinking. This is a person, William Stewart's AP English lit teacher, so what does he know? Says, yes, electric discharges can take place across a vacuum. In fact, the vacuum has a dielectric constant, also called permittivity. The physical constant, epsilon naught, commonly called the vacuum this is super stuff. Lightning discharges can take place in space, too. I skipped a lot of technical jargon that I didn't feel like reading through. So, not lightning as we know it, as the thing said, it takes place in air. Obviously, there's no air in a vacuum, but can electricity travel through space? Yes. So there.
All right. Okay, so now we have other feedback, so I think I've got the right thing to play this time. There we go. All right, so we've got another voicemail from Steve Brown.
Hey again, Brian and Ruthie. This is Steve, and just had a couple of other thoughts on Calypso. Did the computer say that she left the scar on his leg because she thought it was significant? I thought that was interesting that when she was healing him, she left the scar there. Did she say it was 1,000 years that she had been waiting there for the crew to return? I wonder if we're going to get that story, or if that's way down the line. Also, I loved the little time passing montage as they showed him, and the Taco Tuesday was really cool. And where did the computer get the name Zora? Did we have that in season one? I don't remember hearing them call the computer Zora. So, can't wait to hear what you guys thought. Talk to you later.
Well, for one thing, I know that it said almost 1,000 years. So, people have been saying 1,000 years, but it said almost 1,000. So.
Yeah, well, we're rounding up, okay? I mean, what was it, almost 999?
Yep.
Isn't that close enough?
I think so. And I don't think we have heard Zora before, so I don't know where that comes from. I guess that was probably a choice from Michael Chabon. Anyway, is there anything else that he said that – the scar. Yeah, what she said was that the scar, she left the scar because she thought that it was something that meant something to him, like some sentimental value or something like that. And he said it was an old hunting accident. So, but other than that, that's what I got from that. All right, well.
Again, Brian and Ruthie. This is Steve, and just had a couple of other thoughts.
I don't even know how I did that. I was pressing the button on my iPad, and somehow it started playing the voicemail. All right. Well, we've got feedback from actually Steve was in our last roundtable, and the next two people were in our last roundtable as well. So you want to read Mark DeCoates feedback.
All righty. Mark DeCoates says, just watched it. It was fun, but unlike the first short, I don't see this one being relevant in any way to the main show. But then again, who knows? Yeah, I gotta agree with you. I don't know how they're gonna tie this one in, so they probably won't.
Yeah, the only way I could think that they would is if at the end of Discovery, they send the ship into the future.
But, yeah, but that completely crushes my hopes of having Aldous Hodge on Discovery.
You never know. You never know.
He could play a great, 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 great something ancestor. What's his face?
Yep.
I love him. Age of the Geek, baby!
He was in, what is it? What was that? TNT?
Leverage.
Leverage, that's it.
Age of the Geek, baby. That was his line.
Age of the Geek?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah, he was the computer hacker guy.
I never watched it, really.
Oh, it was so good. Oh, gosh, it was so good. I'm sure it still is. I just haven't watched it in a while. But it was really good at the time that it was airing. It was amazing. Love that show.
It is not so on good anymore.
No, it ended quite a while ago. But
yeah,
it was so good. He was on Turn after that. I don't know what he did in between Leverage and Turn, but he was on Turn while that was airing.
Oh, the Washington Spies, or whatever they changed it to. All right. Our other Mark from the last roundtable, Mark Deal, he says, I welcome the freedom to produce a short episode in the universe that doesn't tie into the bigger story. Do you remember when an entity couldn't kill off the crew because they needed someone to run the ship and perform, air quote, routine maintenance? Otherwise, it would break down in a few months. I guess they built the Discovery to last much longer. Yeah, I guess. 1,000 years, that's built to last, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know. I guess if there isn't any kind of, external or internal stimuli, then what would affect the ship to cause it to break down? I mean, it's in a vacuum.
Yeah.
Usually, I guess. Things like air and water cause things to deteriorate.
Well, we have seen other ships that are in disrepair, but I don't know. If it's just sitting there.
We're in disrepair because of a battle.
Right.
Typically. I mean, usually they abandon a ship after it's been completely thrashed. So there's not really any reason to stick around.
Do you think Discovery had any visitors in that 1,000 years?
I don't think so, because it kind of seemed like Zora was on her own.
It definitely did seem that way. I noticed that as well.
I don't know.
Okay, so Glynis Goltz is next. Ruthie?
All right. Glynis says, I enjoyed this episode. The AI has got to the point of feeling the human emotion of love with that single tear when he stopped short of kissing her. On a different subject, I really need one of those replicator thingamabobs. Very handy. I wonder if we'll cross paths with Kraft or his enemies that he ran from. I don't know.
Now, here's the thing. I read that I think Michael Chabon was responding to someone on Twitter, or it might have been Instagram. I don't know. But they asked him about the Vedresh, which was this enemy that Kraft mentions, you know, the one that had the, like the old, what did he call it? The old time or something like that. I don't think that's right, but from the long ago, that's right. That's what it was. And supposedly Vedresh is a corrupted version of the Federation. So if you think about it, and it kind of sounds Vedresh, Federation, Federesh, Vedresh, Vedresh, Vedresh. So I thought that was interesting. So his planet or whatever is fighting the Federation in the future? And how did the Federation turn into the Vedresh? That's what I'd like to know. Interesting. I don't know if we have an answer for it, but
I don't know, but I will say again, 1,000 years is a long time.
Very true.
Well, do we know how long he was on?
No.
Discovery?
We know it was a while, because we see, you know, like that
the progression of time.
Progression of time. We see it was in that what do you call it? I can't think of the word. Montage. Yeah. There was like a time lapse montage, and we see, you know, all the stuff going on in the mess hall and that. I know if I'm not mistaken, in the story, you know, the Calypso story, it was 7 years now, and supposedly some people think that they may have even had a child or something, but clearly that wasn't possible here, unless she replicates him or something. But I don't think we know, but it doesn't seem like until he almost kissed the, you know, hologram or whatever. Doesn't seem like he was really trying to get home. So it seems like it had been a while, but I don't know how long. A month? Who knows?
I don't know. I mean, it could be way longer than that. Who knows?
Yeah.
But
I don't think it's been 10 years, but, you know, I could definitely see it being a couple of months or even longer.
Well, I mean, I could see it being a couple of years, honestly.
It could be.
But who knows? I thought, though, I felt like the AI was really the most interesting aspect of the of the whole story, you know?
I wondered, how did that AI develop on its own without any external stimuli?
I don't know. I mean, that's something that's very interesting. If you think about it, I mean, what's to say that the ship's computer isn't already close to sentience, you know? So
yeah, it's possible.
Who knows? But, I mean, who knows really what kind of thing would spark such a development?
And, you know, something we talked about in season one, like, I think it would be a mistake, you know, to make this Star Trek seem like 1966 technology. So, in other words, we know that AIs exist these days, and we know that they can develop on their own. So I think the fact that we've never really seen this in a previous Trek, I don't have a problem with, because this wasn't a thing in the previous Trek. You know, this wasn't something that people could even conceive of, except for that dumb M5 or remember from the original series, the M5 unit. Anyway, is it Daystrom came up with that? Anyway, we did get one more bit of feedback. We already mentioned some of Wes Huntington's feedback, but part we didn't mention, he says, my rating for Calypso was 6 out of 10. I didn't like it too much, mainly because it was so bizarre.
I liked it.
It certainly was bizarre in terms of, like, previous Trek. Like, one thing I wrote in my notes is that it, in some ways it was very Star Trek, yet it was very un-Star Trek, because it could have really – it didn't need to be in the Star Trek universe. It could have been told in, you know, The Expanse or Battlestar Galactica or any number of science fiction shows.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it wasn't – I don't know that it was something that could be considered unique to Star Trek necessarily. I think there probably maybe were aspects that could have been.
Right.
But, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. Do you have anything else about the episode? I just had a couple other notes.
Well, I think circling back to what Wes said in the very beginning, that, or what we read that Wes, the hold your horses, why didn't Zora do whatever she could to keep him on the ancient discovery? Well, I think that shows, to me anyway, that shows the progression of a character that happened off screen, because Zora recognized, or I should say Zora had the ability of, I mean, a lot of the AI that we encounter in science fiction is very, immature, if you will.
Right.
It's very young. It's very, it's all about me, 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 me. It's very egocentric, right? Because, typically the AI is trying to fight to survive and someone is trying to destroy it, right? So it's very egocentric, based, you know, it's very, I'm the center of my universe or everything important or whatever, because that's how very young entities are. That's how they act, because they don't really know any different. But to have, if Zora were more interested in keeping him in by whatever means necessary on the Discovery, that to me would show her as being a still, as of yet, very young AI.
Yeah.
But with her ability to empathize, basically, put herself in Kraft's shoes and imagine how he feels being separated from his family, his child, you know, his whatever. Then, and then, to be able to utilize that empathy in a way to, express being selfless, in other words, self-sacrificing or putting another's needs or interests over your own instead of putting yours first, to me, shows the advanced, not necessarily advanced, but, you know, shows a more advanced age of that entity. Because generally speaking, if people are raised correctly, they move through a progression from being, I mean, when you're a baby and you're first born, you don't know any better because you can't care for yourself. So it's all about me, 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 me. I cry when I'm hungry, when I'm tired, when I have to poop or whatever, you know, all kinds of things, because there's no other way to receive that care, because that's, you're an infant. You don't have any other way to survive other than to make it all about you. And as a species, we typically do that for infants because of the same reason. We want the infants to survive, whether it's a biological need to perpetuate the species or because you love your child, whatever. That's usually how it is. But as these children, entities, whatever, grow, they progress from being an egocentric person to being, I don't know what the opposite of egocentric is, but
selfless.
Well, yeah, but I'm sure there's a
word. It's probably a better word for it.
Yeah. But basically it's more than just being selfless, because not everyone is selfless all the time, but you have the ability to empathize on the one, you know, for one thing, you have the ability to empathize, and then you have the ability to, as I said, put others' needs before your own, if you choose to do so. And generally, when you love someone or care for someone, you can do that more easily. And that's kind of and you know, I'm sure it's a lifelong process. It's not like there's a switch that's flipped, and not everyone develops this ability to be that way, but usually that's the progression of a child from infanthood to adulthood. Eventually they realize that they are not in fact the center of the universe and are able to function better in society and all that kind of stuff. So to me, that one little thing expressed all of this character progression that happened virtually off screen, and I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, I thought it was cool too. Couple other things. We mentioned a little bit the Odyssey, the story that, you know, this comes from. The way I wrote just a little bit, like a summary of what that story is. It's apparently, Odysseus, who's a warrior, or whatever, been away for 10 years, much like he was in this story. And in trying to get back home, the sea, which I guess is space here, carries Odysseus to the island of Ogygia. I don't know if I say that right, where the witch Calypso falls in love with him. I saw here it was called witch, but I've heard Calypso being called a nymph. But anyway, falls in love with him and keeps him captive for the next 7 years. Now, I don't think he's been gone 7 years here, but anyway. All the while, Odysseus dreams of his beloved Ithaca, and not even the promise of immortality manages to change his mind. So I guess Calypso was going to make Odysseus immortal, and I guess Zora could do that here by simply, you know, capturing him, but
by constantly
repairing him, maybe. And we did see at the end that, you know, the musical is playing again with Kraft and not, you know, not Fred Astaire. So maybe she did capture him, you know, who knows? Anyway,
altruism is the opposite of
what's the word?
Being altruistic.
Altruistic, yes.
Being egocentric, altruistic.
That makes sense. Finally, through the intervention of Zeus and Hermes. So the gods had to get involved. At the end of the 7 years, Odysseus is released. So that there certainly wasn't any intervention going on here, except for maybe Zora's conscience. But
yeah. And I think a lot of Greek mythology, a lot of the characters in Greek mythology never move past egocentrism.
Yeah.
So there you go.
We mentioned Aldous Hodge. The voice of Zora was played by Annabelle Wallace. And I thought it was interesting because she used to date Chris Pine.
Huh, that's funny. I could have sworn for the longest time that it was Lena Headey.
Yeah, I could see that. I could not place the voice.
I was like, man, who is his voice? Who is his voice?
Now, the dancer wasn't played by her, though. The dancer was played by, I've never heard of this person before, but Sash Striga. And it's kind of funny because I listened to many podcasts that struggled with that. They didn't know who it was and couldn't figure it out. It's like it was right in the credits if you just watched it to the end. But anyway, I think that's it. I enjoyed this one. Seemed like you did too. I did a lot. All right. To submit your feedback and connect with us, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, where you can submit text or audio, use a SpeakPipe widget that is found there. You can call the GSM voicemail at 304-837-2278. Make sure you mention in the voicemail that you're calling for the Star Trek Discovery podcast. That way it gets to us. You can also send a voicemail through our email address, much like Steve did, is StarTrekGSM@gmail.com. Most people give their feedback through our Facebook group in the designated episode thread that can be found at facebook.com/group/StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast. And you can also interact with us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is StarTrekDSM. Help us out by sharing when we release an episode. And I'll be posting, Walking Dead talk through, actually posting the audio in Facebook. So I'm definitely going to be doing that for this podcast as well. Figured out how to make a video with the audio. So I will be doing that as well. You can share and retweet us when we have something to say. It can help get the word out when the new episode's out. And you can also find us on the TV Time app. We are the exclusive podcast for Star Trek Discovery on the TV Time app. So you can comment on our posts up there and interact with us that way. You can help support the podcast by subscribing to us in the podcast client of choice, like Apple Podcasts. You can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/Apple and find all of the podcasts within the Golden Spiral Media Network. While you're there, in whatever podcast client you use, but especially in Apple Podcasts, give us a rating or review. That would help us immensely. There are some other apps like Stitcher, and I mentioned last time, Podcast Republic. It's the only there are others, I know. So if you find a podcast client that you use that has the ability to rate and review, please give us a nice 5-star or maximum, whatever the maximum is on that client review. So, or rating. All right. So another way to, what's up?
I said 10 million billion.
Yes. Another way to support the network can be found, I should say another way, but other ways, multiple ways can be supported. I can't talk. Go to goldenspiralmedia.com/support to find other ways to support the GSM network. Now, the next podcast that you will be hearing from us is going to be covering Short Trek number 3, which is titled The Brightest Star. That's written by executive story editors Bo Young Kim and Erica Lippolt, and directed by co-executive producer Douglas Arianosky. And we are going to be recording this next, so you won't be able to give us feedback for that. But the next episode that you can give us feedback for will cover the fourth and final short track that comes out on January 3rd. That's The Escape Artist. So that's the one directed by Rainn Wilson that features Harry Mudd. So, and is written by the creator of the new Lower Decks animated series, Michael McMahon. So that should be interesting. You can also listen to me on my other podcast, which is called The Walking Dead Talk Through. That's also at Golden Spiral Media. And Ruthie has been resting and relaxing for the past 11 months, so she doesn't have any other podcast to plug. But anyway,
incognito.
Until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
Peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.